Dad, this is ludicrous. Why do you keep avoiding the doctor?
Because I feel fine. I'll go to the doctor when I don't feel fine. Besides, I don't like Dr. Jennings. He's got a model of a colon on his desk. He keeps his tongue depressors in it.
My doctor thinks I'm taking hallucinogenic drugs. How do I know? Let's just say a little bird told me.
Mrs. Simpson, I'm afraid your husband is dead. April Fool's. He's very much alive.
Doctors are the worst of all. You pick up the same disease three or four times, they start lecturing you like it's your fault. You want a bite?
Not if you skipped it to me across a pool of disinfectant.
Doctor said I wouldn't have so many nosebleeds if I kept my finger out of there.
Liability waiver.
Don't read it, just sign it. It simply says you won't hold us responsible if you die as a result of gross negligence. It's a standard form.
Think you should call him and apologize?
Yes, he's a doctor.
And the doctor is in the Hal Anthony studio right now. God, that's priceless. Chris does a great job on that.
I wait every week to see what he cooks up.
I don't. The Simpsons. They must have, it must be the best place. What a treasure
over
trove.
Over 20 years of quotes.
What's the doctor's name on The Simpsons? Who knows? I'm not put on the spot, but obviously that's where they get the great material. What a great character. Dr. Dworkin is in the studio with us right now.
Dr. Nick.
Is it Dr. Nick?
Dr. Nick is the one that's the incompetent doctor. Yeah.
Don't ever see the other one. Oh, that's too funny. Hey, I understand you're corresponding or about to be corresponding with Deb Matthews. You have a pen pal coming
up?
Yeah,
well, this is an interesting story, is that it's already started in terms of increasing the complexity of making referrals to various specialists where tests are needed to evaluate the patient. So in this case, real patient, she's in her 30s, having increasing difficulty breathing, no discernible cause yet. And I've referred her to a respirologist after regular testing hasn't shown very much. And so it was a complete note. I usually put all the data, the blood work, the x-rays, everything with it, sent to the respirologist. And usually that's pretty much it. Then an appointment is made. Well, several days later, I get a return back from the respirologist with a note attached to it saying, we cannot see this patient until you fill out this form. And this form contains a list of all the different types of testing that the respirologist will do to evaluate this patient. Many of these tests I never order because I'm not a respirologist. I wouldn't know to order these things. These are specialized tests. But the reason they send it is because of the fee cuts that have occurred for these various tests that only pay the respirologist. If the respirologist saw you, Ron, and said, we need to do a pulmonary function test to measure how well your lungs are working because of the symptoms that you're presenting, it's a standard test. The government considers that to be self-referral because the respirologist is doing the test in his office. And so they said, we're only going to pay you half because it's a self-referral. But by getting me to put down a test that needs to be done, they then can bill the full amount because another physician is asking them to do the test.
Yes.
It just strikes me as bizarre. It just adds a layer of bureaucracy, and I am not comfortable asking for certain tests to be done.
I was about to say, it's not your expertise.
Before the patient is evaluated to know which tests need to be done. So I don't want to play a guessing game about what tests need to be done. But again, the equipment that is required for some of these tests is quite specialized and very expensive. So if you have now a reduction in fees for these particular tests, and let's face it, a pulmonary function test, which takes about 15 minutes to do, pays about $30, right? So you're not talking about a lot. So now they cut that in half. So you have to say that you can't even afford the cost of your machine and the nurse that has to provide the service to the patient.
So this is an example, a concrete example of what is happening as a result of the change in the fee structure. Yeah. So you now have to request
the
tests. The family doctor has to do all the checklist. And you're not a respirologist.
I'm not a respirologist.
So I'm guessing you're probably going to ask for everything almost because you don't want to miss anything.
Right, but you don't want to do that because it's just not proper medical practice.
So you're going to start sending these referral notices to Deb Matthews? How does she come into play?
Are planning to do, and I'll send you the final version, Ron, is that it's actually including everything from the ophthalmologist, the radiologist, the cardiologists, and the family physicians will be using this form that says, doesn't have the patient name on it, it has the requisition, with the information of patient history, what their problem was, and a checklist of the tests that you want to do. And what we are going to do is send all of these to Deb Matthews' office to say, please tell us if this is okay to do or not, because frankly, you're telling us we may have to even pay for this test if it's an X-ray that's not acceptable to you. So please let us know ahead of time, because God forbid we actually make a professional decision on whether this patient needs a test or not. You seem to know better.
Barry, please do send that to me. That's a great idea. So yeah, send it to me. Send it to me right away, actually.
I will. I'll do that.
Get talking about that right away. Well, listen, we appreciate you coming in here.
Sure.
As always, Wednesday afternoon house call. You become more and more of a valuable resource to the community, Barry, the more this goes on. So we are here, some people already waiting to get on.
Sure.
But 521, let me give you the numbers here. If you have a medical question for Dr. Dworkin, give us a shout. 521-TALK, 521-8255. That's the main number. Star 580, 1-800-580-CFRA, 580-2372, the toll-free number. Give us a shout. We do have lines available. If you phone right now, I'm pretty sure we'll be able to get you on. And let's go to Doreen, phoning us from Ottawa this afternoon. Good afternoon, Doreen.
Good afternoon, Dr. Dworkin.
Afternoon.
I'm phoning to ask you, because I heard you on Sunday telling a client, there's so much calcium you can absorb. What would you advise me to do in my situation, as I'm very afraid of kidney stones?
Mm-hmm.
I had a total thyroidectomy in 2008 for papillary carcinoma. Probably several parathyroid glands were removed, and my calcium is very low.
Mm-hmm.
I'm presently taking 4 Citracal a day, which is equivalent to 1,200 milligrams,
right,
and 4 servings of milk. And despite that, my ionized calcium is 1.04 millimoles per liter.
Mm-hmm.
My calcium is 2.08. But my bone density in 2010 was normal. The other complication is I'm taking Nexium 40 with my evening meals for good. What can I do?
Well, I think part of it is if your parathyroid gland, and for our listeners, the parathyroid gland is, they're tiny little spots of tissue that is found on the thyroid. And when the thyroid is removed, sometimes they are removed. And they're responsible for calcium metabolism, how your body mobilizes calcium. So in this case, do you know if all the parathyroid gland was eliminated or you still have functioning glands?
I probably have one left.
Okay. Well, to answer your question, the amount of calcium that you're taking, 1,200 is not excessive. Even with milk, it's about 100, you know, maybe 100 milligrams of calcium. It's not a lot of calcium that you're getting from 4 glasses of milk. So again, you're not going to overload your kidneys and cause kidney stones, primarily as well because your calcium level still remains low. So whatever absorption is going on, it's still not a lot of absorption of your calcium. Nexium, which is a medication that reduces acid production in the stomach, I mean, might interfere with some calcium absorption, but it causes more problems with regards to vitamin B12 absorption over time. So the issue is you may actually have to increase the amount of calcium or have different ways of delivering the calcium to your body. You may actually have to see an endocrinologist if you haven't already.
Yes, I have.
And to have a mechanism, they may have to give you medications that actually help with calcium absorption and calcium deposition into bones. So it's not as straightforward a situation because you have multiple medical conditions. But the answer to your original question about the amount of calcium you're taking, it is not excessive. 1,200 for someone, an adult, is not an excessive dose, even with that amount of milk that you're drinking.
So 12,000 with Citracal and then another 4 glasses of milk is not excessive.
Yeah, if you're taking, it's 1,200 you said, right?
Yeah.
1,200. 12,000 is a lot.
No, 1,200 Citracal and 4 servings
of milk. 1,200, it's not a lot considering that, again, from your blood readings, your calcium still remains low. So again, if your calcium levels were excessive, that's when you would experience calcium deposition in the kidneys and forming stones or crystals. But because your calcium is low, it's much less likely to happen. So
whatever, you're saying I'm excreting it.
You're either excreting it or you're not absorbing very much of that 1,200 that you're taking in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the issue. So this is where your endocrinologist has to give you, I mean, there's only so much calcium that you can take by pill form in terms of a supplement. So your endocrinologist may recommend various other treatments to encourage the absorption of calcium as a means of bringing your calcium level back up.
Such as?
Well, that I leave to your leave to your endocrinologist, because there are various hormonal treatments that they can use to do that.
There you go, Doreen. We are going to have to move on, Doreen.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks very much for the call. So she is not taking too much? That was her basic question.
No, 12, I mean, for most adults, 1,500 is 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams is not excessive.
So she's right within the range. Yeah. Let's welcome Rita, phoning us from Nepean this afternoon. Good afternoon, Rita.
Good afternoon, Dr. Dworkin.
Yes.
Mandy, I was coming home from work about before 2 o'clock, and I start to have like sharp pains, per se, like needles going through my left chest, and like they were coming out right in the back lung or in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to lay down for a few hours, and it seems it slowed down. But I do have, when I take a deep breath, you know, every once in a while, it's a severe pain, and I feel it from the front going to the back.
Okay.
What would that be?
Well, my first questions for you are there any medical conditions that you have, anything you're being treated for at the moment?
No.
So you're not on any medications at all?
I am not on any medication. Okay. I haven't seen a doctor almost a year and a half.
Okay. So the issue with chest pain is that a lot of things can cause chest pain. Usually, if it's pain that is exacerbated, that is pain that is caused by taking a deep breath in, and the pain feels on the surface of the chest, that is, if you can push on the area that hurts and even hurts even more, that is what we call just generally chest wall pain. And that usually is because of muscles, ligaments, cartilage that has been either pulled or strained on the rib cage itself. You see that in people who, for example, are doing any lifting or a sudden cough, anything that sort of stretched the tissues around the lung.
But that's the first time.
And when you get that kind of pain, it can be chest wall pain. But again, with a limited history, and you having pain with your just sitting in the car and getting this kind of pain, what you need to do is you actually have to go see your physician to make sure that we're not dealing with anything either cardiac or even gastrointestinal, because the esophagus can, the tube that runs from your mouth to your throat can,
they get in to see a doctor,
mouth to the stomach can spasm. It can be your heart. It's unlikely lungs don't give you pain, so it's not.
No, but I wasn't thinking more of the lung as much as I was thinking maybe on the heart, but I know that usually it's in the middle.
No, not necessarily. You can't just go by general symptoms. What I would do is I would still suggest that you see your doctor to evaluate the chest pain.
Yeah, it's not something I would just wait and see.
We are right out of time, Barry, so really get in to see your family doctor.
Thanks, Dr.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, get in quickly. I would be phoning
now. Yeah, chest wall pain, especially with the lack of, as a lack of history, you can't just tell someone, just wait and see. You have to have that evaluated.
For low fat, this pudding's pretty good.
I can feel the pounds just melting off.
Our new Hyper Sugar gives you 300% of your minimum daily sweetness requirement.
Do you suffer from diabetes?
No.
Well, you do now.
That's the Simpsons doctor again, I tell you. That's a bedside charmer. Dr. Dworkin, not the Simpsons doctor, here in the studio with us this afternoon. Hey, Barry, we're going to go right to the phones. Some people have been waiting patiently to get on. Who's first? Brigida, I think, has been holding the longest. Good afternoon, ma'am.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I already called last week about my cataract surgery. I got infection, yeast infection, candida, and now it's 9 months. Last month they finished to give me antibiotics, but I can't get back my vision. And doctor, every appointment he said, we will wait. I don't know how long I have to wait and where I have to go to get some advice or something. I am very, very worried about my eye, and I'm not going to go for another eye surgery because I am half blind now.
Right. Well, what I think has to happen, given that the initial problem is that you're not getting enough information, and you're not getting an answer that is satisfactory to you to give you at least a timeline. If someone is just saying, "Well, let's just wait and see," it's open ended. You don't know how long you need to wait and see. So, you are fully within your rights to press them and say, "Look, if you're not sure what's happening, or if you're unclear about the timeline, then, you know, request, you know, you can respectfully request a second opinion to look at the eye to see if there's anything else that needs to be done to manage it. If they're not providing you with an answer, and that's the thing, if they gave you an answer, that'd be one thing. But if they're not providing an answer or they don't know the answer, which is fair enough, then you certainly can request to have someone else take a look at the eye in order to see if they may have a different idea or a different perspective as to what's happening. And so that would be the route to take, because it's difficult to say what to do next without information. And I share your frustration because there is very limited information that you have on hand. So I would say with the next visit, or even seeing your family doctor and saying, could you please send me to a different eye specialist for a second opinion about what's happening with my eye? That would be...
Because my family doctor, he said, I'm not eye specialist.
Well, that's right.
And I can't tell you anything, you know. And those in general hospital, they are the best professors, and I trust them.
Right, they're very good. But at the same time, as with any type of situation where there's not enough information, you know, the first question should be, could you please be more detailed and tell me exactly what's going on? Because the information you're providing to me is making me anxious. I don't know what's happening, and that's makes things even worse. I'm having difficulty seeing, and I'm anxious.
So get a second opinion.
So you need to get a second opinion if they're not able to answer your question.
There you go, Brigida. I hope that helps. Get a second opinion. And as you say, Dr. Dworkin,
it's
your rights
valid
to ask a second opinion.
Absolutely.
You're not, the doctor doesn't throw you out of the office?
In fact, if anybody gets upset with that question, then that's sort of a red flag.
That's a sign that you've got the Simpsons doctor. And leave that office before you become a cartoon character.
Physicians shouldn't take it personally. They have to put themselves in the place of the patient. The patient is scared, and they want to know what's happening. And so you say, okay, let's get a second opinion to see what, if anything, you know, we'll send all the information and find out if there's anything, a different perspective being provided by the other physician.
Absolutely. And Brigida is clearly at that point where I think that would do her world of good. She's worried. And,
absolutely.
Yeah. Usha, welcome to the show.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Doctor, I have itchiness all over my body. Hello?
Yes.
And they are very itchy, but they become
We're having trouble hearing Usha. Is that Usha? Do you want to give it one more try?
No, she's.
I think we've lost Usha. Usha, I do apologize. You've been waiting patiently to get on. If you can grab a landline, perhaps give us a shout back. The numbers again: 521-8255, 521-TALK is the main number here at the studio. You might, if you phone right now, we might still be able to get you on. Loretta, is it?
Yes, it's Loretta. Thanks.
Hi, Loretta.
Hi.
I
have a question. My mother is 90 years old. She's in a residence. And I've hired someone a few years ago to do her foot care.
Okay.
And about 2 months ago, I went in to visit her, and she had two pairs of socks on. So I went to change them because they were all wrinkled and stuff. And I noticed her large toes, the toenails, had gotten really yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And very thick, like I'm saying about, I'm not exaggerating, about a quarter of an inch thick.
Right.
And it doesn't seem, the other toes don't seem to be affected. It's just the two large toes. And I mean, I hadn't seen her feet in a couple of months.
Right.
So I was kind of shocked with that. And I figured with that thickness, it's got to hurt her feet.
It can. There are two things that could potentially cause this. One, as you've just even diagnosed, it's called yellow nail syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Yellow nail syndrome happens as we get older. The nail grows more slowly. And as it grows more slowly, the protein that makes up the nail gets deposited more in the nail itself, and it gets thicker because it just grows more slowly. It's like an assembly line where you're piling up whatever it is, you're pouring whatever it is onto the assembly line. And if it's moving more slowly, more of that stuff gets deposited in the same spot.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with the nail as the nail grows outwards. So that's one possibility. The other is a condition also very common. It's a fungal infection of the nail. It's called onychomycosis. The way you diagnose that a lot of times is actually taking a scraping of the nail, and the physician would then take this and look under the microscope and be able to determine if there is any fungal spores or what we call hyphae, which are sort of the strands of the fungus, as a means of determining if that's the infection.
Right.
But any time the nail gets thicker, especially on the big toe, which is a weight-bearing toe, it can be painful.
Okay.
if the nail gets too thick. And it can cause, you know, you're talking about a nail, it can actually be disabling, especially for an older person.
Well, that's the concern I had, because I hadn't been made aware of this. And I'm her major, I'm the one that is somewhat responsible for her, and I should have been. And I'm annoyed because it went this far without anyone telling me and no action being taken. So the doctor hasn't seen her for this. The taupe, the foot care specialist didn't call me, didn't report it to anyone. So had I not seen her, you know, wearing
yourself,
two socks, I would have not noticed this.
Right. And the treatments for it vary. For example, for yellow nail syndrome, it is literally shaving down the nail, not from the front of the toe, but over the top of the nail, literally shaving it down to thin it out, because it's not a disease. It's simply the way the nail is growing.
Yeah.
And by thinning the nail out that way, and you have to be careful not to do too much. You don't want to hit the nail bed underneath.
Right.
You make it much more comfortable for the person.
Mm-hmm.
The other treatment for fungal infections, given her age, there are medications that are used to treat it. They're oral medications, but you have to be very careful because if she's on other meds as well, there may be interactions.
Mm-hmm. We've got her on Vicks, you know, the Vicks vapor rub, putting that on her toes. Apparently it's supposed to thin them down.
It's not going to work.
Okay.
There's nothing really. The only thing that's going to thin the nail down is really, literally, it's the brute force method. It's shaving it down.
Meds.
It's shaving it down. Usually, I mean, it sounds funny, but it actually works. I had a gentleman who had diabetes, but he also had these really thick toenails. I mean, literally about a half an inch to an inch thick, almost in a pyramid shape.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what I did is I used my Dremel. And
the doctor should be doing this, right?
Yeah,
shaving
yeah.
Down?
And I brought my Dremel in from home.
Can you do it? Can the patient?
Well, you have to be careful. But I bought a Dremel and I turned it on and I used the sanding function of the Dremel, the rotary Dremel, and it shaved a nail down.
Should a doctor be doing it though?
You need someone. It can be a podiatrist. It can be anybody who has
a foot care specialist.
Yeah, you have to be careful because as you shave the nail down, you know, you don't want to go through the nail and hit the skin underneath the nail.
There you go. Loretta, I hope that helps you. We do have Usha back. Thanks very much for phoning in, Loretta. We do have Usha back. We're going to try one more time, see if Usha has a better phone.
Hello?
Hi, Usha. Oh, that sounds better. Go ahead.
Okay. Doctor, I have some rashes all over my body, and they are very itchy. And after 2-3 days, first one die down, and then new one comes. And the body feel very hot.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, recently I feel very dizzy, and my like every 2 minutes or 3 minutes. So I went to see my doctor. He said take Gravel, but it doesn't help. It makes me sleepy.
Are there any medical conditions that you have?
I have high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking medicine Atacand.
Okay.
16 mg. And then I am asthma too, so I take Ventolin and Flovent.
Ventolin and Flovent. Okay. Well, the itchiness that you've been having, the rashes that you've been having.
Yeah.
When did this start?
Oh, they start all the time, day, night.
No, but when it first happened, was it a month ago,
months ago? Yeah, no, a week ago.
A week ago. Was there anything a week ago that was different that you experienced? Anything new?
No, I don't think so, doctor.
Because usually itchiness and rashes, very difficult to diagnose rashes over the radio.
Yeah.
But ideally, did your family doctor see the rashes?
Yeah. It happened 2 years before, too.
Okay. Because
Then I put some cream and lotion.
And it went away?
Yeah.
Yeah, usually itchy rashes usually mean inflammation or irritation or allergy. But again, the reasons for it, we could be here for hours trying to figure that out. Ideally, what you want to try and do, and this is you have to discuss with your doctor, is see if there's been any, you know, for something to pop out all of a sudden a week ago, something different had to have occurred to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it may take investigations as to soaps or perfumes or detergents or new clothes, or it could be a host of things that could be causing this. Could be medications.
Yeah.
It's all over your body. It could be something you're eating.
Mm.
So it's a whole slew of things that may need an allergist to see you, a dermatologist to look at the rash. So there's a whole bunch of stuff in order to determine what it is.
Okay. This one happened before, so I'm not worried. But now recently I feel dizzy.
Usha, I'm afraid we're right out of time, Usha. We're going to have to let you go this afternoon. But there's
that was more important for me, dizziness.
The dizziness. Oh, I wish you'd asked us that about that first, Usha. We are right out of time, ma'am. Perhaps you could phone back on Barry's show on Sunday or catch us next Wednesday. But there you go. And the rash, she's seeing her family doctor, so she's doing the right things here.
That's it.
Barry, thanks very much for joining us again this afternoon. Always a pleasure. Dr. Dworkin, that was your Wednesday afternoon house calls.